The glowworm was a wise and crafty predator. It could create tunnels to any location in the physical world, but kept the exits in deep, dark places where humans wouldn't notice, and never lingered around the same settlements for very long. If lesser spirits wanted to make a go for the lands of humans using his abandoned passages, that was none of its concern. Kuruk's mistake was trading names with it. Spirits with self-appointed names were incredibly powerful and dangerous, Nyahitha had told him, and there was a power in introductions. Knowing Father Glowworm's name finalized the curse that had been slowly building upon the Avatar over the years. It dried the ink on the contract. Father Glowworm knew it too. The two of them were in it together for the long haul, the spirit declared. Perhaps they would have fun. Kuruk, deadened with exhaustion, showed the human-eating spirit his definition of fun. Their fight nearly created a gaping hole in the boundary between realms. Father Glowworm was stronger than the other spirits, and Kuruk was too stubborn to die. Their energies bit into each other like blades clashing edge to edge, leaving permanent notches. With a strike that nearly broke the foundations of the bedrock around them, Kuruk wounded Father Glowworm grievously, the spirit diminishing in size and power several times over. But it managed to escape, wriggling away into an endless labyrinth of darkness. It was an outcome the Avatar found acceptable. The disappointing secret of Pai Sho most novices never learned was that at the very highest levels, half the matches between masters ended in unsatisfying, inconclusive draws. He'd done lasting damage to his enemy, enough to ensure the spirit would keep out of the human world for at least a generation or two. And it had marked him in return. Neither of them would ever fully heal from the encounter. They would know each other in their bones forever. Like old friends. Kiyoshi stepped away from her predecessor's memories, gently, like they were pieces of crystal too delicate to handle. Unlike the communing session in North Chungling, where she'd watched his youth unfold by herself, Kuruk had been standing beside her as they silently witnessed the horrors of his later life. There hadn't been a right time to speak to him. Still, she was grateful for his presence this time around. She couldn't have handled watching those memories on her own. Father Glowworm had scared her witless back when she had met the spirit in the flesh. She looked at Kuruk, examining his strained but stoic face. By the time of his death, he would have been more injury than unbroken skin underneath his clothes. His appearance in the spirit world must have been altered by his own perceptions and preferences. He remembered a version of himself from before the worst days of his life took over. The meadow around them had been mended and no longer looked like a broken plate. "Why were there so many angry spirits during your era?" she asked. She understood now that Kuruk had only taken on the creatures that couldn't be appeased by anything but death. "That's a question for another day," he said. "In order to give you the aid you sought, I had to share memories of my avatarhood and Father Glowworm. Now that you remember this portion of your past life, you'll be able to find your boy in the physical world. Trust me." She found herself believing him. "What about the rest of your memories?" The words slipped out before Kiyoshi realized she was prying. Kuruk's jaw tightened. "There's little to see after I lost my friends." "Where was Kuruk?" Kiyoshi had once asked Kelsung, curious about what happened after their group had split. Traveling the world had been the answer, breaking hearts and taking names, being Kurok. It sounded like the water avatar had been living it up by himself, having one great adventure across the four nations. But the grief in his face right now told her differently. After the companions of his youth left his side, Kurok had been alone, surrounded by a world that celebrated him perhaps, but completely and utterly alone. The man in front of her was a physically large person, but looking at him, she could only see the limits of the space Kurok filled. It reminded her of the way Genju's corpse seemed to shrink after the life left his body. Death and time made everyone small, reduced them to trivialities. She had no doubt her successor would look at her with skepticism, wondering why everyone claimed this Kyoshi person was considered a giant. "I'm glad I finally reached you, Avatar Kurok," she said, meaning it wholly. His shoulders hitched, and then they eased. She didn't consider he might have needed this connection as much as her, assuming a past life could need anything. "There's one more thing I have to tell you." Kurok suddenly appeared reluctant, a change of mind taking hold of him. "But I don't know if it's ultimately worth it. I don't want to cause you more pain." Kyoshi read his grimace and realized another flaw in Kurok's character. Outside of his bending opponents, perhaps, he could not stand seeing other people get hurt. "You might as well." Kurok sighed. "Come with me." They walked side by side. The unreality of distance and solid ground flowed to their advantage. A few strides took them out of the meadow and into the horizon, as if they were spinning the world underneath them with their feet. She forgot to observe their journey and take in the splendors of the spirit world. By the time she remembered to look for Kelsung's glorious painted landscapes and curious talking creatures, they arrived at their destination. They'd gone from nightmare to nightmare. Kurok and Kyoshi stood at the tip of a drained, dead swamp. Trees that needed their roots submerged in liquid had withered into kindling. The silt floor of the basin had dried into dusty mud crack. She had an idea where the water had gone. A great gash in the earth had opened, splitting the width of the swamp's edge. The crack started small and tore away from her feet like the beginnings of a great canyon cut into the desert. The depths were filled with the same wild, clashing, mindless color that Kyoshi had threatened to immerse herself and Kurok into. The creator of this tear had stood where they stood now, the origin point clearly marked like a burst of outrage. "Did Yun do this?"
"Yes. The spirit world reacts to our emotions. The wounds we bring into this place take on physical characteristics. Unlike the rupture you created, this one isn't healing. Your boy is keeping it open and festering by clinging to his anger."
Kyoshi nodded. "I know. Yun's not in his right mind because of Father Glowworm's influence."
"No. You've held on to that excuse long enough."
Kurok was gentle but unyielding.
"What I needed to tell you is that spirits can possess a human being's body, and they might even merge with a person to give them new shapes and forms. But they don't take over people's thoughts. Yun is in complete control of his actions. He has been, the whole time."
"Oh," Kyoshi said. She wavered where she stood.
"Oh."
If Kurok was right about Yun, then Zoryu was too.
I'm sorry, kid, Kurok said. I wish it wasn't so.
The sky, a clear blue sheen, began to swirl around her axis. Clouds appeared for the sole purpose of marking her spiral. Kurok glanced up with a disappointed expression.
Shame. Looks like rain. We'll have to cut the outing short.
Kyoshi tried to speak, and salt water came out of her mouth. It spilled down her chin and dampened her robes. She wanted to give parting words to Kurok, but her throat was thick with the sea. Someone rolled her to her side, and the rest of the water came rushing out of her body. She felt the wooden deck of Sulan's smile pressing against her cheek. Captain Junho and the crew ringed her, frowning with worry. It would be bad luck if an Avatar died aboard their ship, even a foolish Earthborn one. As Kyoshi lay there, she could feel the gift Kurok had given her. The battle between the previous Avatar and Father Glowworm had left identifying scars on both parties, marks carved so deep as to be permanent. She and Yun were the inheritors of that legacy. She could tell where he was. It was a faint presence, flickering at this distance, but it had a direction. She knew if she reached for him, extended the flow of her spirit, she could follow him to his location. He'd likely tracked her through the Fire Nation using the same method. They were each other's beacons, two torches in the darkness. And he'd used that connection over and over again to make her suffer. Kyoshi sniffed and immediately regretted it. She wiped the burning salt sensation from her nose. I thought I told you not to come after me, she said to Captain Junho. Several sailors were dripping wet like she was. The strongest swimmers must have fished her out. Junho nodded solemnly.
You did. But that was obviously a stupid order, and we were never going to obey it.
If only the world were filled with common-sensed people like the captain and his crew. She let her head thunk back to the deck and closed her eyes. How dare you defy your avatar, she muttered. Interlude. The Man from the Spirit World. After consuming Father Glowworm, Yun went through the checks Sifu Amak had taught him to perform after coming into contact with potentially deadly toxins. There was no burning or numbness in his stomach or on his skin. No tingling on his lips. His vision was as clear as it had ever been. He held out his hand and spread his fingers. They were steady. No effect. Perhaps he'd drunk enough vileness in his life to render him immune. If there were signs that appeared when a spirit passed into a human, they were masked by his own flesh. He couldn't discern whether Father Glowworm was destroyed, dissipated, or alive somewhere inside him. He didn't care. He was more puzzled by what had spurred him to behave so. Maybe it was sheer contempt for his enemy. Genju had often told him to try and avoid feeling contempt in his political duties. It made you act irrationally, blinded you to your own gain. Genju. Yun gazed around him, his hands on his hips. He decided, quite logically, and of his own accord, that he should start digging. Straight down. He dropped to his knees and buried his fingers in the damp soil, parting the dirt. He shoved clods of earth, spirit earth, out of his way, yanking at the remaining roots that laced themselves across his path. He tore at the fibrous weave, sap bleeding into the lines of his palms. Forcing his way through the layer of living vegetation, he encountered darker clay. He went deeper. He dug as the animals did, not like badger moles with their bending, but in the manner of clawed, malign, lower beasts that never saw the light of day,
creatures that laid grubs and grew fat and pulsing and luminescent in the darkness. He flung clods and castings behind him and over his head. The which way was up no longer mattered. He bored deeper and deeper, darker and darker, until the only sound in the pitch black was his own breath. His exhalations hot and trapped against his skin. Yoon woke face up. He had to pry his eyelids apart with his fingers, glued together as they were with dried tears and sediment. He was lucky. Had he passed out under the sky with them open, the burning sun would have blinded him permanently. The other part of his body he feared for were his nails. They should have been chipped, shattered, worn down to flakes. He'd scratched away at so much soil and stone with hands that weren't meant for it. But they were fine. Dirty, yes. Kiyoshi would certainly give him a scolding later. She hated it when he absent-mindedly picked the grime from under his nails throughout the day. "There's such a thing as soap," he shouted in imitation of his friend's distress. His voice bounced off the striated walls of a gully. The runoff that had carved it was long gone. Nothing grew here.
"I may be dying of thirst," he thought to himself.
Yoon staggered out the path the rain would have taken had there been any. The earth was so barren and devoid of animal signs that he thought he was still in the spirit world, doomed to wander a wasteland until the land sloped away to reveal a town below him. He picked his way down the rocky hillside, hunching and limping, until he remembered he wasn't injured, just tired. And possibly delusional. There was no way any of what he'd gone through could be real, was there? The spirit world was as much of a state of mind as it was a place, according to some scholars. The settlement bore marks of cheap, rapid construction, the type of boomtown constructed to exploit opportunities and people in equal measure. He could tell with a couple of footsteps that most of the brickwork wouldn't last more than a few years. Yoon kept his mouth shut, despite being on the receiving end of a few hard stares from the villagers on the outskirts. Blundering in and shouting, "Hey, what place is this? Where am I?" was an invitation for trouble. But try as he might, he lost all caution and composure once he saw the well at the center of the square. He ran toward it, stumbling over his own feet, frantic like a pet for its returning master. A very large man, sitting on the porch of one of the nearest buildings, saw him and slowly got up. He walked over, placing himself firmly in Yoon's path. A heavy club dangled from his belt. Yoon slowed to a halt.
"This is Governor Tuo's well," the guard said. "If you got tags, you can drink."
He flicked the carved wooden chits that hung from a string around his neck. He had the twang of Shishanese in his fourth tone syllables, which meant Yoon wasn't far from where he'd first exited the human world, dragged into that cave by Father Glowworm. This town must have been built as part of a new mining operation, its citizens the workforce brought in from afar. He wondered how many of the villagers knew they could glimpse their futures farther along the mountain range. They only had to look at the abandoned ruins where Genju had brought him and Kiyoshi. Once the veins of ore dried up, so would the money. The workers would be discarded, just like the husks of their homes. No more use to anyone. Yoon ground his heel into the dust. Through his earth bending, he could feel the shape of the well. The weathering told him it had been dug in the distant past, probably a century before any human being realized there was wealth to be extracted from the mountains.
"Did Governor Tuo put that water in the earth? Did he drill that well himself?"
Yoon's tongue rasped over his lips. It was difficult for the walls of his throat to part from each other. The worst part was he knew Tuo. And the parsimonious governor was exactly the type of man who would refuse someone a drink like this. The guard's hand moved to his club.
Look, Yun said. Let me have some water, and I'll make sure you're rewarded beyond...
The sentence died in a gasp. He was too weak to offer the man a fortune beyond his wildest imagination. It occurred to him that he no longer had any fortune to give. There was a trove of wealth in the mansion in Yokoya, and he owned exactly none of it.
Go try one of the shops, the guard said.
He drew his weapon and pointed to the corner of the square.
They can give you their water if they want, but this here is the governor's well.
All right, all right. The first shop in that direction was a tea house, as far as he could tell. It was just another step added before his destination. No need to despair yet. Yun teetered over to the building, where a chimney sent puffs of friendly white smoke into the air, indicating a stove was burning away, boiling water for tea. The entrance was on the other side. He navigated the alley, using the walls for support, skimming his hand against the texture of the brick, and only made it halfway through before slumping to the ground. Now, this is a familiar feeling, he thought, his back pressing against the outside of a building he wanted to be inside. Just like the good old days in Makapu, listening in on the classroom. His teeth chattered. He hadn't realized how cold he was. His head tilted lower. His thoughts drifted to Kiyoshi again. He could feel her warmth against his flank, as if she were next to him. She wasn't, though. She was in Taihua, the wrong mountain range, on the complete opposite end of the Earth Kingdom. Yun blinked awake from the sleep that threatened to claim him and never let go. How did he know Kiyoshi was in Taihua? He tried reaching for her again. Their distance across the physical realm didn't matter. He was certain of it now. Her spirit was a beacon, a shimmering signal in the darkness. Steady, reassuring, unique. It was everything he wanted. He yanked himself back to his own place in the world, ashamed. Of course her spirit stands out among all others. She's the Avatar. He was too dried out to cry and too weary to cry out. Here, among humans, the earth did not automatically shake itself asunder in obeisance to his emotions. There was nowhere for the pain to go, no reflection of his suffering. Another wave of grief swelled inside him, and he could only cling to his own sides, powerless, trying not to drown.
Oh, come on!
A man shouted loud enough to rattle the waxed paper covering a window above Yun's head.
You're docking me half a week for one missed day?
You should be grateful you're not fired,
someone else replied calmly, probably the owner of the tea house.
You miss your shift? You don't get paid. How hard is it to show up for work when you're supposed to?
It's because you insist on using that stupid calendar, said the first one. The 6,020-whatever-th day of the era of Yun? What are you, some upper-ring ninny who sleeps with a portrait of the avatars under his pillow? It's not going to make this dump any fancier.
Yun froze at hearing his own name. They were referring to the avatar calendar. 6,020-odd days into his era meant Yun had been trapped in the spirit world for about a week.
I'm surprised you're not a greater devotee,
the owner said to his delinquent worker.
Didn't the Avatar save your sorry hide from the big bad pirate queen?
Wait, what?
A woman said. Boots clunked to the floor like she'd taken them off a chair to sit up in interest.
I never heard about this. You were one of Tagaka's hostages?
Gao here is originally from Lanso Village on the other side of these mountains,
the owner said.
He got nabbed like a gold piece left in the street. Whisked away like a poached pig chicken.
Oh, cram it, said the other man. You tell the story more often than I do.
He sounded like he viewed the whole experience as embarrassing instead of harrowing, like tripping into a pile of manure. Yun squeezed his eyes shut. He'd been thrown one last bit of luck. He summoned the energy to stand up, unsure if he could do it again after this. There was no door, only an empty frame with a curtain tied to the side. As he entered, Yun knocked on the wooden strut to draw the attention of the people inside.
Sorry to trouble you, he said.
He'd seen finer establishments, to say the least. The interior was furnished with rope spools for tables. The benches were overturned supply crates. The owner, a burly man with heavy-lidded eyes and hairy arms, was in the middle of wiping used cups, evidently the only cleaning they ever saw. His gaze dipped to Yoon's chest, where no tags were to be found.
What do you want?
I could use some water, please.
He heard a laugh come from the woman sitting at a table. She had wavy hair tied back low on her head, and a round, flat face. Her boots were caked with dried slurry, but only up to the ankle. She must have been a shift boss from the mines. A regular worker would have been covered in the filth from head to toe, nor would they be in a tea house in the middle of the day. Yun did his best not to stare at the steaming pot in front of her, or the long, damp leaves poking out from under the lid of her ceramic gaiwan.
Do you have money?
The owner said.
I do not.
His pockets were empty, and after clawing his way back to the mortal world, Yun's once fine robes were no longer capable of convincing anyone he was rich.
Then get out.
The owner said it with so little malice that it sounded like a pleasant good afternoon. Yun expected this response, but he had one last desperate counterplay.
I couldn't help overhearing your conversation about the Avatar. You, someone who obviously respects the master of all four elements.
He bowed slightly at the owner before turning to Gao.
And you, sir, whom the Avatar rescued from danger.
Gao was thinner in body and face than his boss, and in the habit of shifting his weight from side to side where he stood.
Yeah?
He said defensively, his pinched features turning even narrower in suspicion.
What of it?
I know it sounds hard to believe, Yun said. But I'm the...
He hitched. An era passed in silence, the almost lie stuck to his lips.
I'm Yun, he said, recovering. I am the man your calendar refers to. I led the rescue efforts in the southern seas.
He gave it a moment to sink in.
Now, I ask you again, can I please have some water?
Perhaps he would have been taken seriously had he not hesitated over his identity. Perhaps it wouldn't have made a difference. The owner's sleepy-looking eyes sparked with amusement, not reverence.
I don't know, he said.
He tilted his head at Yun.
Gao, is this your savior?
Gao squinted.
The sailors who picked us up off that iceberg were Fire Navy. I didn't see an Avatar do anything to rescue me.
Yes, but I... you see, it's...
Yun's hand went to his head. A quick way to explain the complexities and logistics of transporting over 1,000 kidnapped Earth Kingdom villagers eluded him. The owner took advantage of his loss for words by going to the stove and placing a fresh cast-iron pot on it. From the heavy way it clanked, it was full.
I'll tell you what, he said. You can have all the water you want, provided you stay right over there.
He rapped the pot with his knuckles.
Here, have a drink on me.
Yun's jaw fell. You... what?
Your Earth Kingdom. So if you're who you say you are, then it shouldn't be a problem for you to waterbend some refreshment over to that gaping mouth of yours.
Seems fair, said the mine boss, grinning wickedly. She took a deliberately long and noisy sip from her own cup.
Though Gao had been angry with his employer moments earlier, he too found Yun's stunned silence a great joke.
Come on, Master of the Elements, he guffawed. Aren't you thirsty?
There was a ringing in Yun's ears. It was as if he'd lingered too close to a firecracker, spent too much time watching the lit string burn down to its ends, and now he was living in the aftermath of the explosion.
You're asking me to prove I'm the Avatar, he whispered hoarsely, for a drink of water.
There was no more. There was no more left in Yun. There was no more he had to give. He raised a trembling finger.
I risked my life for you, he said, pointing at Gao. I risked my life to save yours. You wouldn't be standing here right now if it wasn't for me.
Gao's eyes went wide. He tried to protest, but something blocked the words from leaving his throat. The owner and the mine boss looked like they were going to mock him for being singled out, but Yun fixed them with stares.
And you too. You couldn't just help me.
Hey now, the woman said, suddenly finding a cliff on the other side of the door they'd opened.
She scraped backward in her chair, jarring her table. Her cup tipped over, sloshing its contents to the floor.
You can have mine. You can have what's left.
She grasped clumsily at the pot she'd been drinking from, but only managed to get the lid, not the handle.
Take it. Take it.
It was too late for that.
I dedicated my life to people like you, Yun said.
He couldn't tell if he was laughing, crying, croaking out bestial sounds of fury. The human speech was mixed in somewhere.
I wanted you to thrive. I wanted you to prosper. I tried so hard.
There was a crash behind him. He saw the owner of the tea house fleeing out the back of the shop. Yun swept his hand over the air, and a string of filthy ceramic cups flicked out like a whip, flattening themselves into a knife's edge. They slashed across the back of the big man's legs, sending him to the floor with a gruesome thud. Knocked out. Yun would have to wake him up at some point. He turned back to Gao and the mine boss, who trembled in place, stuck with fear. He watched their foundations sway, trying to figure out whether or not he enjoyed it. He decided it didn't matter. Yun reached over Gao's shoulder, giving the man a conspiratorial smile, and closed the door curtain from the inside. Yun drank the stagnant, sulfurous water from the thick-walled bucket. It sloshed down the front of his chest, puddling on the ground in front of the town well. It was the best drink he'd ever had. He poured some out on the face of the well guard, lying at his feet. Unlike some people, he shared his bounties.
How's the governor's water taste? He asked.
The liquid splashed against the corpse's glassy, unblinking eyes and pooled in its open mouth. Around him, the town was silent. Everyone who could run had. He would have to learn to control his energies at some point if he didn't want people fleeing him on sight. Yun drew another bucket and poured it over his head, repeating the process until his runoff no longer contained streaks of bloody crimson. He threw the wooden vessel to the side and listened to its hollow clank.
See, Kiyoshi, he thought. I can bathe without hot water. No problem.
His friend's presence beckoned to him from across the world. Though he wasn't certain on the details, he was convinced there was a permanent connection between the spirit that took him and the Avatar. Kiyoshi was Kurok, and he was who he was.
Well, he said out loud to no one, it looks like I've been fired.
Perhaps it was for the best. He would need the free time because he had a list of things to do, lots of personal business to take care of. And at the top of the list was paying his respects to Genju. Filled with new purpose, Yoon took off down the road, whistling as he went. Home again. Yokoya had never been wealthy, but now, without Genju's presence, its prospects seemed even grimmer than Kiyoshi remembered as a child. The ghosts of the sages who had fallen here would take a long time to relinquish their hold on the moldering docks. The hardened rocky fields, the sparse weather-beaten houses. A month had passed since Zoryu's victory. Kiyoshi walked slowly through town, wading through her own past. The queasiness in her stomach told her she'd been wrong back when she'd declared her ties severed with Yokoya after Kelsong's death. She was and would always be from this village. Only home could make you feel this bad. She passed one of the logs pounded into the earth in an attempt to please the spirits and shook her head. Perhaps the ones who inhabited this peninsula were gentle and satisfied by stakes in the ground. It wasn't out of the question. The spirits, as she was learning, were subject to all the variations and complexities of human beings. There were the terrible ones, the irrational ones, the cruel ones, the harmless ones, the ones who would talk to you and the ones who would force you to guess their whims, like a servant groveling before a silent, smirking master. Motion caught her eye, children scampering from cover to cover. They poked their heads out from behind doorways and corners of houses, whispering to each other. She wasn't wearing her makeup. They were just rude the way children were, peering at the stranger. The adults gave her perfunctory nods as they continued their sweeping, the never-ending sweeping. Pushing dirt around from one place to the other was a burden and obligation shared by the lowly of every nation. She had no doubt that if she visited one of the poles at length, she would see the common folk doing the same with the snow, herding the drifts from one end of a village to another. It was a small mercy that she didn't see Aoma or anyone else from that crew. Then she remembered the reason. It was the middle of the workday. The villagers her age would be toiling in the fields, stooped among the furrows, or out at sea, hauling in the day's catch. She, the exalted Avatar, had stepped off a pleasure craft belonging to the royal family of the Fire Nation. There was no sense or structure to it, the way the world scattered lives into the wind like chaff to land so far apart. She left the village and made her way deeper into the fallow sections of land. The path made a sharp turn around the hillside, and she braced herself for what she was about to see. The Avatar's estate, in all of its shabbiness. Facing the results of her own neglect was difficult. It made her wonder if she could ever call herself a tidy person again. The once vibrant colors of the walls badly needed a fresh coat of paint. The south-facing gatehouse was empty, and some of the iron studs of its heavy doors were beginning to rust. The lawn was overgrown and patchy with weeds. It was a testament to how much effort was needed to maintain a large manor in good order, to fight the ravages of time and decay. It took so much energy to remain frozen in an eternal state, never changing. Once you gave up, turned your attention away for the slightest second, collapse progressed further than you expected. Kiyoshi shoved the gates open, the metal groan announcing her presence. The garden had thrived and died in equal measure, certain shrubs coming to dominate the others. Balance had been lost, or perhaps it had been restored to a form displeasing to humans. Thin tendrils of vines curled over the outdoor sculptures and had taken root in the sands of the meditation maze. Hardy weeds had taken the place of precious, ephemeral flowers. There was a message for her, written in pebbles over the ground. "I'm inside." Even with the house in its current condition, there should have been someone to greet her. The halls looked completely abandoned. Kiyoshi's footsteps echoed and creaked over the wooden floors as she checked each section of the mansion in turn. She found what she was looking for in the dining room. Yoon sat at the head of the long table with a small place setting in front of him. He was calmly eating a plate of dumplings. Auntie Mui stood at attention behind him, tears in her eyes. It was the garden party all over again. Kiyoshi's first thought was to separate hostage and captor, to free Mui from whatever bonds Yoon had her in, and get her to safety. But before she could, Mui let out a sob and bounded over to her. She collided with Kiyoshi and wrapped her short arms around the small of her back, the highest she could reach.
"My girl, my girl," she said, weeping with joy. "At last, my girl and my boy are both finally home."
Kiyoshi stared hard at Yoon over the top of Auntie Mui's head. He met her gaze and sipped his tea.
"This house will be a home again," Mui sobbed, her tears forming a damp spot on Kiyoshi's robes. "We'll clean up the rooms. We'll have the guests coming back. The two of you, you were the heart of this place, and now you're together again. Everything will go back to the way it was."
"Yes, Auntie," Kiyoshi said, never dropping her eyes from Yoon's. She gave the older woman a gentle squeeze and patted her on the back. "Everything will be all right from now on. I promise." Yoon smirked. "Lying to our elders now, are we? How low." "Auntie," he said, "we should have a big dinner tonight to welcome Kiyoshi home."
"Yes."
Mui's eyes shone with happiness.
"Of course. I'll need to do some shopping in town. What would you like to eat, my dear?"
"Stock-nose mushrooms," Kiyoshi said firmly. Mui would search Yokoya end to end before realizing she couldn't find them. The futile quest would buy Kiyoshi more time. Mui nodded, undaunted. She hurried out of the dining room, paused by the doorway to give her children one last beaming look, and then disappeared down the hall. Yoon gave it enough time for Auntie Mui to leave the mansion before speaking.
"She'll be gone for a while," he said. "And she gave the remaining staff the day off. The house should be empty."
He popped the last dumpling into his mouth and laid down his chopsticks, chewing in contemplation.
"If there's anything I've missed about this place, it's Auntie's cooking. So, what have you been doing for the past few weeks?" Yoon said once he was done. "Mastering the Avatar State? Or some other secret fighting technique you wanted to use against me?"
"I was learning healing. My teacher says I'm the fastest study she's ever seen."
"Are you here to look at my arm, then?"
He rolled the shoulder Heiran had injured. It was probably the reason he'd laid low until now, and it had recovered enough not to bother him.
"Are you going to try and make me all better?"
Now, it seemed, They were both ready.
No, Yoon, Kyoshi said. I'm here to put you away.
Yoon leaned onto the table, chin in one hand, interested in this new development.
You can't be allowed to show your face in public again, Kyoshi said. Zoryu's managed to contain the damage you've done in the Fire Nation, but if you resurfaced now, the country would fall apart.
So? I don't care about that anymore. And the beautiful thing is, I don't have to. I used to have to negotiate, accommodate, bend over backward to make people happy. But those days are over. You know what I spent the last few weeks doing while I recovered from my injury? I thought about all the liars and backstabbers I've met across the four nations who kissed my feet when I was the Avatar.
A blissful thought crossed his mind, and he smiled.
And I realized that I could kill them all, he said. Not an exaggeration. With enough time, I truly think I could actually kill them all. I know their names. I know how they're connected. Most important, I know why they would deserve it.
Kyoshi had hoped she could talk some sense into Yoon. She'd hoped his rage had been sated upon leaving the Fire Nation, and that he might come along with her quietly. But it was clear now. Yoon's rampage was never going to end with Janju and Heidan and Lu. In his eyes, the whole world had wronged him. He wasn't trying to balance the scales with his killings. He was trying to smash the device into bits.
Yoon, Kyoshi said, you're not going anywhere.
Oh? What are you going to do? Send me to the prisons at Laogai? Lock me up below the house in a cage like Jinju did to Xu Ping An?
So he'd known about that.
I don't want to fight you, Kyoshi, Yoon said. But you're not leaving me much of a choice here.
Knowing the truth, that Yoon wasn't being controlled by a spirit, that this was the real him, was as painful as Kurok had warned. Talking to Yoon was like pulling out barbs. Little pieces of her flesh were tearing away with every word, irrecoverable. But it had to be done. Kyoshi drew her fans. I didn't say you had a choice. His brows shot up as if he were only now seeing her for the first time. His friend had been suddenly possessed by a spirit. Yoon rose from his chair and slapped his thighs.
All right, Kyoshi, let's see how this plays out.
He flicked his elbow like a greengrocer bouncing an apple, and a square stone column burst through the floor of the dining room, snapping planks and overturning the heavy table to the side. It reached the ceiling before stopping. Kyoshi didn't move or flinch. The attack wasn't directed at her. He was just setting up the game board, bringing in earth the two of them could use. The stone had thrust into the house exactly between her and Yoon, equal in distance. He leaned to the side, his grin serving as a salute and a signal.
There, fair for both of us. Have at it.
As if a frenzy had fallen upon them both, they began punching bullets from the monolith, chipping off fist-sized rocks and sending them speeding at each other. They were aiming blind. Yoon's projectile smashed through the plaster of the walls behind her. She ducked and circled, never letting up her own barrage. Yoon matched her in violent parody of the gentle spiraling footwork of airbending, keeping to the opposite side of the pillar. The vicious hail of stones whined by her ears. Kyoshi ended the challenge early by shoving the entire pitted and cored stone column at Yoon. It sawed through the dining hall as easily as a finger opening an envelope, ripping its way outside the mansion itself, leaving a gash of sky and field behind. She cleared the dust with a blast of air. Yoon was no longer in the room with her. There were three exits he could have taken.
She chose the one that led to the central part of the house, with its many rooms and corridors. It would make for a more interesting battleground, and therefore it would be the one Yun favored. Kiyoshi stepped through the lanes of her own memories. The mansion's paths solidified, changing from phantoms to solid terrain. She knew which floorboards creaked. She remembered which turns were sharp. A spike of earth burst from a nearby painting on the wall, aimed at her head. She blunted it with brute force, holding out her fans, grinding the stone to dust a foot away from her face with sheer willpower.
"Such strength!" she heard Yun hoot.
She followed his voice. She passed the woodpile where she'd once stolen a maul and used it to bash open her inheritance. The door to the kitchen, where she inadvertently revealed the first sign she was the Avatar. Kelsung's meditation alcove. It was a drubbing from her past. These were the lumps she had to take. Kiyoshi rounded a corner, and a wall of bricks laced itself together, barring her way.
"Hey now," Yun called from the other direction. "You know how I never liked you going into my room."
"And I never did," Kiyoshi said without turning around. "Not even after I took over the house."
"Thank you."
He was nearing her from behind.
"It's the small kindnesses that mean the most."
She flung a thrust kick at him, a torrent of air shooting from her foot, enough wind to scrub the hall from the floor to the ceiling. Only after she heard a crash against the back wall did she let up and look. The force of her airbending had sent paper screens and hallway tables all the way to the other end, smashing them to bits. No Yun, though.
"I was wondering when you'd bring the other elements to bear," he said from somewhere close by.
He knew the house as well as she did, every nook and hiding place. It had been his domain before it had been hers. Kiyoshi moved toward the back of the house, where the expanse of the training ground lay. She entered the empty courtyard. It smelled like rotting straw, the stuffing of the target dummies moldering from disuse. Many of the clay earth-bending discs had shattered on their own, exposed to seasons of cold and heat that bleached them from brown to white. She walked to the center, exposed and vulnerable to attack from all sides.
"Yun," she said, "can I tell you something?" "Of course," he echoed off the surrounding walls, impossible to pinpoint. "It's time to let go."
Kiyoshi lowered her hands.
"Whether you kill me here today or not, you have to let go of what happened."
Yun emerged from one of the alcoves. A shadow fell across his face, blanking out his expression. A wave of malice, as tangible as the elements, came pouring forth from him, the sickening wrongness she'd felt when he first came back to the world of the living.
"Let go," he snarled. "Let go?"
She'd been trying to pick the words that would help him, and instead she'd struck a nerve.
"You have the gall to say that after helping me kill Genju?"
Yun shouted.
"You got exactly what you wanted, Kiyoshi."
She closed her eyes and let the violence of his emotions wash over her. It was a test of her root. When she opened them again, she was still standing firm.
"And it didn't bring me peace. It was wrong that you were lied to, Yun. It was wrong for Genju to do what he did. But he's gone. Whatever pain and anger you have left, you have to live with it. You can't put it on anyone else."
If the boy she knew was still inside somewhere, he would listen to what she had to say next.
"You don't deserve to hurt more people because of what you suffered, Yun. You don't deserve to hurt me."
Yun paused. For a moment, Kiyoshi thought she'd pierced through the blinders and chains trapping her friend. There was a chance she'd defied the odds and broken through to him.
But a confidence born from a terrible place straightened his spine.
Oh, Kiyoshi, you've got it all wrong.
The motion he made with his ink-stained hand resembled the water bending of Tagaka, the pirate queen. A wave of liquid as high as Kiyoshi's shoulders struck her hard from behind, knocking the wind out of her. In her surprise, she thought somehow Yoon had learned to waterbend. He'd finally figured a way around the immutable laws of the world. Were there two avatars now? Or he'd stolen a portion of her bending, the element she'd overlooked the most for lack of experience? It was only when the splash around her solidified, trapping her limbs like a tree caught in an ice storm, did she understand. He'd liquefied the stone floor of the courtyard and sent it crashing over her. He'd melted the rock without heat. Yoon's earthbending skill was such that he could treat his native element like water. Kiyoshi was encased from the back, gripped as tightly as a turtle duck by its own shell. She couldn't move her arms and legs or turn her head. Yoon approached, avoiding the center line of her mouth and any potential dragon's breath.
I can't believe you think I would ever hurt you.
He gently tugged the closed fan out of her right hand.
You, the one innocent party in this whole affair. I would never hurt you, Kiyoshi. For Yang Chen's sake, I used to be your whole life.
He dropped the weapon, and it pinged against the ground.
I know what's happening here. Your duties have gotten to you, haven't they? I remember what it was like, carrying the weight of the four nations on my shoulders. Genju used to liken them to unruly students in a classroom, requiring the guidance of a strong hand.
He paused and chuckled.
I used to believe it meant showing the way, leading by example. Now I know better. The world is a child refusing to listen, screaming in tantrum. It needs to be slapped a few times until it learns to be quiet.
Yoon relieved her of her other fan and tossed it over his shoulder. From the little shake of his head, he wasn't only disarming her. He was removing the parts of her that confused him, trying to reduce her back to the state he was familiar with. The serving girl. The Kiyoshi in his memories didn't carry around implements of war. He would have her immortalized. But certain injuries couldn't be undone. Yoon frowned deeply when he saw the scar around her throat, an indelible sign of change.
See this? This is what I'm talking about. Look at what you've suffered for the sake of duty.
He pinched the collar of her armored robe, rattling the links of mail inside.
They forced you to hide in this shell. They turned you from a gentle girl into a walking terror. Avatarhood is a curse. Look how it's made you treat me, your oldest, truest friend.
Listen to me, Yoon.
Kiyoshi found herself bolstered by an unfamiliar, terrible, powerful feeling. Pride. Pride in herself. Pride in her duty, no matter how great and terrible and ill-fitted to her it was. Despite the opposition of man and spirits, this was the era of Kiyoshi. There would be no other.
I wear these clothes because I choose to, she said, loud enough to ring across the courtyard. Those marks are who I am.
She locked their gazes.
And I have friends much truer than you.
A water whip lashed down from above. Yoon only managed to leap back at the last second. The liquid cracked like leather where his feet had been. Up on the roof, across the shingles, a slender woman in a fur skirt rode a tide of water. She sent another lash at Yun, forcing him farther away from Kyoshi.
Wong!
Karima shouted.
Get her out of there!
On the other side of the training ground, a huge man flew into the air, stepping on pillars of earth so delicate they seemed like threads. Despite his massive bulk, his flitting movements were as elegant and well-balanced as a sparrowkeet's.
Hold still!
He shouted at Kyoshi, like she could do anything else. Wong